Up next, Lucia Martinez interviews Daniel Montero, journalist and filmmaker of the documentary series The War on Cuba. The series focuses on the devastating impact of the generations-long illegal U.S. economic war on Cuba. Montero is also part of a media outlet titled Belly of the Beast, investigative journalism that exposes the political and economic interests driving U.S. policy and its impact on Cubans, home and abroad. Lucia interviewed Daniel, who is in Cuba, through the Zoom telecommunications platform, which is subject to a legal U.S. sanction, and was operated through a virtual private network, or VPN. This resulted in, at times, poor audio quality. Special thanks to Patricia Kohlberg for rescuing parts of this discussion.
Hey there, Olmos. This is Lucia Martinez coming to you with another international piece. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Daniel Montero. He is a journalist and producer with Belly of the Beast. Daniel has been interviewed on Democracy Now! And has published in The Guardian. And he graduated from the University of Havana's Communication School in 2020 with a degree in journalism. Daniel, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thanks for talking to me from Cuba. So my first question is that back in July, U.S. media covered extensively anti-government protest called SOS Cuba. Can you give some context to these protests and what role the U.S. government played in them?
Yes, of course. Back in July 11th, the biggest anti-government protests in decades happened here in Cuba. They lasted a day and a half here. Thousands took to the streets. And even though a lot of what people were talking about had to do with, political messages, I can tell you that the main causes of this protest had to do with the major crisis that we have going on in the country for quite some time now. Scarcities of food, I would say, from two major reasons. And this goes to answer what the United States' role in all of this is. And it is the fact that COVID has really hit hard Cuba, because, for instance, tourism plays a big role in our economy. And the other reason, of course, is the United States sanctions. During the Trump administration, more than 200 new sanctions were imposed on Cuba, adding to the already existing one because of a 60-year-old policy of war, basically an economic war being waged against Cuba. And that's basically the role that the United States plays in all of this.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about Biden's response to the SOS Cuba protests?
After the protest, the Biden administration has focused on three main things when it comes to the protest. One has been giving us internet. Two has been giving us vaccines to against COVID. And three has been bringing remittances to Cuba without them going through government. Now, the thing is that all of these three things we already have. Cuba has produced five of its own vaccines. And right now, the majority of the country extensively has already received at least one doses of the vaccine. Internet, we already have, obviously, since I'm talking to you via internet. And number three, remittances are already coming into Cuba by the millions through unofficial ways. So that's basically what the Biden administration has focused on, when what they should have been focusing on is withdrawing from a policy of aggression that they have against Cuba for 60 years now, and that the Biden administration has done nothing against. The major thing that United States politicians could do to help the Cuban people would be to stop the blockade, the embargo. But that's not what they have chosen to do.
And can you just give an example of how the blockade affects everyday Cuban life?
First of all, the blockade is an economic war. It basically prevents the Cuban government from doing business with the United States and with many other governments because it's extraterritorial. Now, the number one thing is that governments provide services. And in the case of the Cuban government, those services are quite large. We're talking about medicine. We're talking about education. So when you prevent that government from functioning normally, you are affecting the people that are the beneficiaries of those services. That's one side of it. The other side of it is that many of these sanctions are specific enough so you can feel it directly. We're talking about cutting down on remittances. Thousands and hundreds of thousands of Cubans have relatives in America that are now almost unable to send money to Cuba, or they have to do it paying more money to do so. Like when they cut down on flights and cruise ships, they hit on one of the biggest economic sectors on Cuba, which is tourism, which employed a lot of people that lost their jobs because of those sanctions. Back in 2019, for a while, Cuba We were deeply affected when it came to transportation because the United States prevented oil from coming into the country. Those are just three examples. I could go on because there's actually, and sadly, a lot of them.
Just to give a little bit of background to the differences between Obama's kind of pivot towards Cuba towards the end of his presidency versus Biden, can you talk about what that looked like? I know it didn't last for very long, but it did have an impact, right?
Yes, it certainly did. Basically, at the end of his second term, Barack Obama chose to depart from the traditional way in which U.S. and Cuban relations had played out for a lot of time. He did so because the traditional way, which was one of aggression, of not negotiation, of sanctions, had not worked. So he changed that. He re-engaged in relations, and that was very beneficial both for Cubans and Americans in many ways. Now, when Donald Trump came in, he completely rolled back on this. But not only that, he also imposed a lot of new sanctions against Cuba that affected us here very much. Now, Biden, we in Cuba were actually very hopeful that he would return to the Obama approach, having been Obama's vice president back then, and because of some announcements he did during his campaign. Sadly, in the time that he has been in office, he has done nothing to return to that approach. And he has basically left in place each of the sanctions that Trump applied during his term. So right now in Cuba, even though Biden is president, it is exactly the same for us as if Trump had never left office. And Trump was the worst presidency for the Cuban people in terms of sanctions.
So I grew up in I was born in Latin America, but I grew up in South Florida. And, you know, growing up, I mean, Florida has always played an important role in U.S. elections. Every 4 years, it becomes very annoying to consume media in the state of Florida because you're just constantly bombarded with political ads. And so I'm curious, like, in your opinion, in your perspective, why do you think there was that shift between what are two presidential candidates from the Democratic Party?
The very significant expat community of Cuban Americans in Florida plays a very important role in elections, like you said, because Florida is a swing state with a very leveled Republican and Democratic population. And then the Cuban American significant population then plays a significant role. That's it. But then the problem is a lot of this expat community, the initial group of it that migrated in the 60s as a result of the Cuban Revolution, understandably have significant differences with the Cuban government. And these political differences have been exploited for years. Now, the myth has been in place for a long time that unless you have a tough on Cuba stand as a politician, you cannot win this Cuban American community. Now, I would say that in some cases, this has been true. However, when Barack Obama applied his different approach of re-engagement with Cuba, the Florida International University's poll on Cuban Americans in Florida that they conduct yearly actually showed that for the first time, the majority of those polled, of those Cuban Americans, opposed the embargo, opposed the sanctions. Now, what that tells me is that leadership matters. The position that the leaders of the community and that politicians assume in terms of U.S.-Cuba politics actually defines what people feel and believe about this. Because in many cases, the stand of Cuban Americans in Florida is more sentimental than rational.
I just want to add, I was in Miami when Obama announced that he was going to open up relations with Cuba. And for the most part, people were generally on board. I mean, I work with a lot of Cubans and, you know, their attitude, at least this is anecdotal, of course, but their attitude was, OK, it wasn't working. So let's try something new. So I could personally attest to that. But let me ask, who, in your perspective, who is to blame for the continued embargo? Is it that small but very vocal minority of the Cuban expat community?
In part, yes. But to leave it at yes would actually be unfair to them. You have to understand that whichever the end game, the result for those in Cuba is, I can understand why many people in Florida feel the way they feel about the Cuban government and about all of this. Yeah. The problem is, I think there are politicians that I feel are more to blame than that community because they actually know better. The politicians that profit from this relationship of hatred know better. They know how it works and don't care. And I'm talking, I don't know, about people like Marco Rubio, about people like Bob Menendez. These are people that directly profit from this, that know that the things they say are lies and don't care. So I think at this point in time, I would put the blame more on them than I would put it on the expat community as a whole, at least the part that opposes engagement or opposes a different approach. And of course, the national campaigns, whichever president that decides to play the game instead of trying to break the myth like Obama did is also responsible.
So related to that, and trying to maybe convey a message out of Cuba that most people in the United States don't often receive, can you just talk a little bit about what you've produced about Belly of the Beast?
Yes. Belly of the Beast is a American-based media that is composed of American and Cuban journalists. And we cover Cuba-United States relations. We try to do so by showing the reality of the Cuban people. We want to expose the fact that United States politics, United States sanctions have a direct effect on the people in Cuba. And that needs to be shown. And that's basically what we have based all our work around. We had a 3-episode first part of the war in Cuba, and we are producing a second part of 3 episodes again. We focused on the Trump policies for the first time around, and we're focusing on Biden for this second delivery.
Okay, excellent. And then where can people watch that?
Well, Belly of the Beast is on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. We release all of our content directly on social media. Belly of the Beast Cuba is the way to find it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Danya.
No, thank you, Luisa.
Sabes, tu retórica ya me aburrió. Yo no sé a qué más le vas a mentir. Otra vez, mi pueblo que se unió te enfrenta y te dice que bloqueo no. Tratas de ponernos contra la pared, te da rabia no podernos someter. Otra vez, mi fe te sorprendió y el mundo te grita que bloqueo.
The song you just heard is called Desbloqueame, which literally translates as Unblock Me, but a more literary translation might be End the Blockade. The song is by Raul Torres.